From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A little pill called Plan B, the so-called morning after pill, has made some major waves for the Bush-era FDA this fall. After a 16-month investigation called for by Congress, the Independent Government Accountability Office this week released a report questioning how the agency blocked the emergency contraceptive from over-the-counter sales. The report says the FDA did not follow its standard procedures, and it suggests that, quote, unusual decisions made about the drug, a flashpoint for social conservatives, were shaped by politics and ideology, not science. This hour on Point, religion, science, and the FDA. We will hear this hour from critics and defenders of the FDA decision on the morning after pill. And we'll talk with Susan Wood, former chief of women's health at the FDA, who resigned in protest at what she saw as the political sidelining of science. But first, joining me from Washington is Mark Kaufman. He's national health reporter for The Washington Post. He's been looking at this week's General Accounting Office report. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Mark, exactly what is the GAO saying here about this decision? Give us the background and how they've weighed in.
Okay. This goes back to the first FDA decision regarding Plan B. This was made in May of 2004. There had previously, about 4 or 5 months before that, been an advisory panel, expert advisory panel meeting that in which the researchers overwhelmingly recommended in favor of having this drug, which has been on the market since 1999, to be available without a prescription. The FDA staff was also in favor of that, saying that it's something that would help women and would probably reduce the number of abortions in the United States, since this would make it easier for women to get protection or get contraception after unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in May of 2004 was that, rather unexpectedly, the FDA decided that, no, this was a bad idea, that there were too many problems with the application, particularly as it related to young girls, girls below the age of 15. And as a result, they rejected it. There was an outcry from proponents of this and from quite a few people in Congress. There was a request for a GAO report. It took the 16 months for the report to come. And basically what it says is that that the FDA acted in an unusual way in a number of significant manners, in particular that that the lower-ranking FDA officials who normally would act on this kind of proposal refused to reject it, and it was ultimately done by the acting head of one of the major centers. To me, the most interesting and potentially the most explosive part of the report is that they GAO says that it appears that that senior members of the FDA staff from the commissioner's office told others that that the application was going to be rejected several months before the scientific evaluation was completed. This is highly unusual in an FDA context, in particular because FDA is supposed to be entirely science-driven, and I think that a lot of the discussion from here on will focus on that issue.
We want to look at exactly that point, but remind us first how Plan B works and why it has been so controversial along the way.
Okay. The way that it works is that it is a high dosage of a regular, widely used contraceptive. Within 72 hours, it is believed, or it does have the effect of preventing a pregnancy from occurring. The reason that it has become controversial is twofold. On the one hand, social conservatives, some religious conservatives, believe that having it more easily accessible will promote promiscuity, particularly among young girls, because they say it would make it easier to deal with the immediate effects of unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
That it would encourage women to do, or young girls to do it. The second, and this in my repertorial view is what's really driving the the discussion and the controversy, mm-hmm. is that some people believe that that pregnancy begins at conception, or that conception begins at fertilization, at the exact moment when sperm enters the egg. Mm-hmm. Under some circumstances, it is believed that this emergency contraceptive can keep a fertilized egg from implanting. Now, in the uterus, now, mm-hmm. the FDA and most medical associations describe pregnancy as the point at which the fertilized egg is implanted. However, there are some people who disagree with that, and as a result, they would say that that Plan B is, in effect, an extremely early abortion.
Now, why has the push been there to get this into over-the-counter sales? As you say, it's been available since 1999 with a prescription. Why over-the-counter?
The basic reason is that to get a prescription, frequently a woman would have to first see a doctor and then get the prescription, and that could take 2, 3 days, 4 days. This medication works the sooner the better, and the window in which it does work is described as within 72 hours. So if you have to spend time getting a prescription and then getting it filled, you could make it much less effective.
Now, Mark, the charge here from critics of the way all of this unfolded is that the Bush White House, essentially under pressure from social conservatives, one way or another reached into the FDA and predetermined the outcome of this decision. Is there evidence to support that view in the GAO report?
There's evidence to say that, no, not specifically that the White House did one thing or another. The GAO goes out of its way of saying that it did not ask that question, so we really don't know that. What we do know, though, is that you know, people up to the commissioner were involved in the decision, and that's somewhat unusual for a switch to an over-the-counter status. And we do know that they were under a great deal of pressure. One of the, to me, intriguing things about this whole situation is that Mark McClellan, the former commissioner,
brother of the White House spokesman, Scott.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And Lester Crawford, who was the acting commissioner for a period, then later became the commissioner, and was deputy commissioner when all of this was happening, basically they did not, it's not exactly that they didn't cooperate with the GAO investigation. They just ultimately said, hey, we had nothing to do with the decision, and left it at that. They did not allow investigators to come and interview them.
Is that unusual? It seems strange. If the GAO wants to know how a decision was made, is it unusual? Are they entitled to say, we're not even going to talk to you, to speak to you, to show you our records?
They are entitled. The GAO does not have subpoena power. They are, however, entitled to records, and here's where things may get difficult, because Mark McClellan says that there are no records of any discussions that he had. There was no back and forth. All of his email traffic was deleted within one day. Henry Waxman and John Dingell have particularly highlighted that issue as a serious, in their eyes, a serious breach of government accountability. And so I think that there's going to be a lot that's going to kind of happen as a result. There have been formal requests now by Waxman for a congressional hearing. There's also been a bill introduced that would have Congress, in effect, approve the switch.
And the charge here, at bottom, a kind of corruption of the scientific mission of the FDA.
Yes, and while we don't know really what happened between the FDA and the White House on this, I think that it would be fair to say that, and certainly what the GAO says, is that this application was handled very differently than almost any other application, especially since it looks like the scientific review may have been incomplete at the point at which senior people said, hey, look, we're not going to approve this, then the question of whether or not politics trumps science is clearly on the table.
Mark Kaufman at the Washington Post, thank you you very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Mark Kaufman, national health reporter for The Post. He joined us from Washington. We are talking this hour about politics, science, and the fate of the morning after pill at the FDA. You can join the conversation. How do you see this story? Has ideology trumped science at the Food and Drug Administration? Should science be held exempt from ideology or not? And what should the standard be at the FDA? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Chris Mooney. He's Washington correspondent for Seed magazine and author of the new book, The Republican War on Science. Chris Mooney, thanks for being with us. What do you see in this saga?
It's just the latest case study of the political misuse of science by the Bush administration. This is the kind of behavior that has been denounced by some of the nation's leading scientists, including now 48 Nobel laureates have endorsed a statement saying that this administration repeatedly misuses scientific information across a wide variety of issues. Now Plan B has become Exhibit A.
What's the line exactly that was crossed, as you see it, in this story with Plan B at the FDA?
Sure. Well, science was misused because it's quite clear that the agency did not want to approve this drug, and then they went one-stop shopping for a scientific-sounding rationale to justify what was clearly a political decision. The GAO report calls the rationale that they came up with novel, but that's really quite soft language. What it was a dubious scientific-sounding
excuse. And the rationale was?
That there wasn't enough, quote, data on how younger adolescent women would use the drug. But, of course, as the GAO points out, FDA never asked for this sort of data for any other approval.
But aren't scientific decisions also social decisions? I mean, isn't there a place for social considerations at the FDA, even as the scientists do their work?
Oh, absolutely. Well, actually, I'm not sure that that's so at the FDA, because the FDA's decisions are supposed to be science-based. But generally,
yeah, but if you put a pill out like this out there, it has obviously social ramifications.
But you should never distort the information. You should never cook up dubious scientific arguments to justify what is a political goal. And that's where the integrity of science is on the table. You know, there's this language about politics trumping science. Actually, politics always trumps science. But you shouldn't distort science to justify politics.
Don't mix up the two. Don't confuse the two. In that, don't lose sight of the actual mission of the FDA. Maybe there's another forum for the other conversation. Chris Mooney, author of The Republican War on Science, stand by. We're talking about the politics of the morning after pill. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the politics of the morning after pill, about science and ideology in the pill called Plan B. You can join us. How do you see it? Have politics and ideology overrun science at the FDA? Are religious conservatives now driving the Food and Drug Administration? Or should science be held exempt from politics, from conservative values, or not? And is the FDA the right value for a clash of social values? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined in the studio by Chris Mooney, author of The Republican War on Science. We will hear later in this hour from Susan Wood, the former director of the Office of Women's Health at the FDA, who resigned at the end of August over just this issue. We invited the FDA on the show. They declined. But we have here with us Wendy Wright. She is Executive Vice President of Concerned Women for America. It's a conservative public policy coalition. Its goal is to, quoting here, promote biblical values among all citizens. Wright testified at the FDA Advisory Committee hearing on Plan B. Her organization filed a report with the FDA saying that Plan B would put women at medical risk. Wendy Wright, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
So what do you make of this whole story at the FDA? Has science been subverted here, Wendy, by a social conservative agenda or something else?
Well, as it turns out, the studies show that, in fact, when this drug becomes easily available, it does not reduce the number of pregnancies, it does not reduce the number of abortions, but sadly it does increase the number of cases of sexually transmitted diseases. In England, they found the STD rate skyrocketed. In Sweden, they found the teen abortion rate went up. And in Thailand, they found the most frequent buyer of the drug is men, who sometimes slip it to women without their knowledge or their consent. So there are a number of societal concerns that the FDA should have been looking at. But sadly, some in the lower levels of the FDA did not look at the research or the studies that contradicted the claims that were being made by Bar Labs, the proponent of Plan B.
Your group sets out to promote biblical values among all citizens. The review panel that looked at this, as I recall, a 24-member panel, 20 out of 24 gave it a thumbs up. Scientists looking at this, what puts you in a position to to trump the views of 20 out of 24 scientists here, Wendy.
Well, I'm not asking that my views trump. What I would point out, though, is that this scientific panel that I did testify at, they were not given this information by the lower levels of the FDA. And so parents especially should be comforted that some of the higher-ups in the FDA, and let's recognize the FDA did not find that there was any political influence. What they found is some of the higher officials did get involved, which they should when you're considering a very controversial proposition. And those at the higher level did look at the evidence that was not given to the advisory panel and that the lower levels refused to look at. For example, no studies were done as to what kind of effect would happen on adolescents who use it multiple times. Now, the drug company actually encourages it to be used frequently and by any age group. They ran ads in college newspapers that had a picture of a fraternity with the caption, "So many men, so many reasons to have backup contraception." Yet the drug company didn't bother to do the research. What happens when women or adolescents use it multiple times?
Wendy, what's at the front of your agenda here? Is your first priority promoting biblical values, or is your first priority public health? Or how do you line it up?
You know, they do go hand in hand. The moral way is the healthiest way. You find it time and time again. In fact, that's what often is the reason why what is commonly known as morality came into being, because it has been proven out to be the healthiest ways to live.
Do you think we need scientists at the FDA in that case, or could we just use the Bible as a guide there?
Well, as I've pointed out, every argument I've brought forward has been scientific. Every argument that we have presented at the advisory committee hearing, every step of the way, has been based on good science and good public health measures.
Wendy, stick with us. Chris Mooney, here is a voice of support for what happened with Plan B, a voice of support for the administration, and in the sort of mission of Concerned Women for America, a voice in a way of part of the president's base. So what do you make? Wendy says she has a scientific case to be made here.
And this is what the Christian right always says as they go about trying to undermine various forms of contraception. They mask their moral views in scientific-sounding argumentation. But what you're hearing are not the scientific views expressed by the Scientific Advisory Committee that actually advised the FDA and that voted 23-4 that this was effective, or the FDA staff that agreed with that advisory committee.
What about the point-by-point complaints about this from data that Wendy says she's got from overseas that support her argument?
Well, there's a study that was just published that also came out after this that was in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is one of the leading medical journals in the United States, and it surveyed, I believe it was some 2,000 women, and it found no change in sexual behavior on the part of them. So, I mean, I can cite my studies too. The point is we need to have a process in which the scientific information is assessed with integrity, and that's what needs to exist at the FDA.
Chris, Wendy Wright, I want to get our callers in here. Emily's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Emily. You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling about the morning after pill, and I just have to say that I think it's really important to remember that women need to have the access to what has been labeled as a contraceptive. And it's something that can prevent getting to the point of having an abortion. And the truth is, most of the women that use this are females that are above the age of 18, usually are in secure relationships, or have been victims of rape or a circumstance that was out of their control. So this isn't something that would necessarily increase promiscuity.
Emily, when you see what happened with this decision at the FDA, how do you interpret what's going on here?
I feel like it's an intrusion on my right. Personally, I'm 24 years old, I'm in a serious relationship, and I like the fact that if I need it, if something were to happen with my current contraception, that I could possibly have access to this over the counter without having to deal with a 3-day wait at a doctor's office.
Wendy Wright, what do you say to Emily? She says women want it and need it, and why should the government get in the way when the scientists are saying let them have it? It's fine.
Let's recognize that the drug is available with a prescription, and in any circumstance in which a woman would be considering taking the morning after pill, she needs to have medical advice and oversight, because in any of those circumstances, she is at risk of a sexually transmitted disease. Many of these diseases are silent. She will not know because there are no symptoms to it.
Well, you say she would need it, but Wendy's described some circumstances within a relationship where she might not need that. And anyway, the FDA said over-the-counter is fine. I mean, the panel said that. So, again, what's the basis for you instructing women what they need when 20 out of 24 FDA panel members say no, over-the-counter is fine?
The the morning after pill is a high dose of the birth control pill. The birth control pill requires a prescription and medical oversight. No one is questioning that, because women could have certain medical conditions that would keep them from getting the low dose of the drug, heart problem, liver problem. As well, it can cause very serious side effects, heart attack, blood clot, stroke. So there's good reason, and no one's questioning, that the low dose be available with a prescription. All those reasons still hold true for the high dose needing medical oversight. And let me go back to the issue of rape. That circumstance, especially a woman needs to have medical oversight, because it's very likely she suffered other kinds of physical problems. She will also need further counseling, and there needs to be forensic evidence obtained to go after the rapist.
And Wendy, let me ask you, do you see Plan B, the drug, as tantamount to an abortion or not?
Well, the advocates for the drug, the manufacturer, says it works in three different ways: delaying ovulation, preventing fertilization, or inhibiting implantation. That third way is what's controversial.
Is that a problem for you?
Well, let me explain. In order to use that phrase of implantation, something must exist, and that would be an embryo. Now, majority of women do believe that life begins at conception. At the very least, full information should be given to women before they take the drug so that they are aware of how the drug may operate.
Is that reason enough in your book to block distribution of the drug?
Well, again, what we're going back to is easy access to the drug. And when you have easy access to the drug, there is no decrease in pregnancy. In fact, that study that Chris just mentioned, the JAMA study, it was put together by advocates of the drug, and their own study found easy access does not reduce the pregnancy rate. So there are a number of reasons why this drug should not be easily available, all of them having to do with good public health and health for women.
Wendy Wright at the Concerned Women for America, Executive VP there. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Emily, thank you for your call from Washington. I want to turn to Chicago, where we are joined by Susan Wood, former Assistant Commissioner for Women's Health. She was Director of the Office of Women's Health at the FDA. She resigned on August 31st in protest over the FDA's decision to delay over-the-counter status to the Plan B pill. She's previously a research scientist at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Susan Wood, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We've just heard the argument from Wendy Wright, who represents those opposed to Plan B's over-the-counter sale, giving what she describes as a public health rationale for why this never should be available over-the-counter. What do you say to that, Susan Wood?
Well, I'm sorry to say that I think she's terribly mistaken, because I think some of the arguments raised that I hear talk about how this is not contraception. The mechanisms that she talks about are exactly the same mechanisms available to regular birth control pills, and are exactly IUDs also block implantation, and yet they are very well accepted by people and by the medical profession as good and effective forms of contraception.
People
who are comfortable with birth control pills should be equally comfortable with emergency contraception. This is not an abortifacient, and it's so important that people understand that it is contraception that people should have access to.
Susan, before you joined us from Chicago, Wendy made a broader argument, really, which is a kind of what she puts as a public health argument, that this will encourage teenage promiscuity, which brings all the risks of sexually transmitted diseases and onward health effects, and that is the sort of umbrella reason why Plan B should not be available over the counter.
Well, again, I say that she's mistaken. The scientific reviewers at the FDA evaluated thousands of pages of data, and there are good studies out there done both in the United States and elsewhere that demonstrate that it does not change sexual behavior, does not increase risky behavior, and it doesn't change contraceptive behavior. It's just one more option to be available to women and to couples. There are already condoms over the counter. There are spermicides over the counter. There's a sponge over the counter. Access to contraception doesn't change sexual behavior. What it helps is help reduce unintended pregnancies. And if we can lower the unintended pregnancy rate in this country, well, then we can have the possibility of lowering the abortion rate in this country. That's the really sad part of it, because this is common ground. The only connection that this product has with abortion is that it has the potential to reduce them and reduce the need for them. And I think everyone can agree we want to reduce unintended pregnancies and we want to reduce abortions. And this is why, I guess, while at FDA, I couldn't understand why this would be considered at all controversial.
Susan Wood, step back with us for a second. You took a very drastic step at the end of August. You resigned entirely from a very high post at the FDA, a post where you were tasked to defend the interests of women. What is the big picture here? Why did you take such a dramatic measure in response to this case, or was it even a broader picture? Give us your big problem, your big critique.
Yeah. The issues were several-fold in that it was really a personal decision to help maintain my own sense of self-respect and credibility. I'm so proud of what FDA's mission is and what it, and it's so important to promote and protect the public health. And what I saw in the end of August of this year was that not only was the science and medical evidence being overruled and disregarded in this decision, that the people themselves, the scientists and clinicians who work there and who had evaluated the data, they were also being completely cut out of the decision making, and that frankly this did not promote the health of women and families. And since my job was indeed to champion women's health inside and outside the agency, I knew that I couldn't either work effectively inside, which I had done as a government employee for nearly 15 years, and nor could I, on the outside, go out and explain and defend this decision as a good civil servant and a good and loyal FDAer, which I considered myself to be. So in order to be able to explain what happened to people and to be able to maintain my own sense of credibility, I had to step down from the position.
We're all on the outside looking in. You were right there on the inside. What is it that's happened? What's changed in the Bush administration years?
Well, in this particular case, what was so extraordinary was the fact that the professional staff, the scientists and physicians and pharmacists and statisticians, all the folk who spend their lives working at FDA and very committed to what FDA does, were completely cut out of the decision. And it was as if they were, or we were all waiting for a decision about a drug approval to come from somewhere else.
And when they were cut out of the decision, what moved into that void, that vacuum? Where was the decision made then? What
you
impulse?
Know, I really wish I knew. I because we were cut out, we don't really have direct information about what happened. All I can assure you is that it was not based on science and medical evidence, and it wasn't based on the usual FDA process, which we depend upon to make sure that the information we get from FDA is accurate and correct. And it was just, it's very distressing, not just to those who care about reproductive health or women's health, but for those who care about whether we can count on the FDA label or an FDA approval meaning something to people. FDA's responsibilities are so broad in terms of ensuring a safe food supply, the blood supply, our medicines are safe and effective, medical devices. We really count on it. We may not think about it every day, but we do count on FDA every day, and we need to be able to ensure that it is credible and being allowed to do its job correctly. There are great people in there wanting to do their job correctly. We have to make sure that they're allowed to do it.
Susan, I have Chris Mooney with me here in the studio in Boston, author of the Republican War on Science. Chris, what do you see as fundamentally at stake beyond this issue of the Plan B pill?
Oh, it's like Susan said, and I do want to commend her for coming out and telling us what actually went on behind the scenes. The integrity of the federal government scientific agencies like the FDA, which we fund with taxpayer dollars and which we expect to use science to serve the public interest, their integrity is at stake. The professionalism and the credibility of our government is at stake. We've seen these kind of problems at other agencies. We've seen the White House meddling with the content of scientific reports at the Environmental Protection Agency, for example. So this is not just at the FDA, but it's undermining the very integrity of the government that we rely upon to serve us.
Big stuff. Susan Wood, in Chicago. We're so glad you're with us. There's more we want to learn. Chris Mooney, stick with us. We're talking in this hour about the politics of the morning after pill, about science and ideology, and the pill called Plan B. Callers, we know you're there, and we're going to turn to you. Listeners, what do you make of the lack of transparency, the apparent lack of candor about this at the FDA? How can an FDA chief refuse to speak to congressional investigators on such an issue? What was your reaction when Susan Wood bailed out of the FDA? What's your message for her today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the politics of the morning after pill, about science and ideology, and the pill called Plan B. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. What do you think of about how all this has transpired? Where do you think the line should be between science and social policy and their interaction? 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined today from Chicago by Susan Wood, the former head of the Office of Women's Health at the FDA, assistant commissioner there. She resigned in August in protest at exactly how Plan B's been handled. Also with us in the studio in Boston, Chris Mooney, author of The Republican War on Science. Joining us right now from Bettendorf, Iowa, is Marvin. Hi, Marvin. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I was calling in response to your guest who's talking about morality being important to the health of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take exception to that. However, I do take exception to aggressive fundamentalist religious groups trying to make people come into their flock, so to speak, with using fear tactics. And in fact, what I call terrorism, and saying that ours is the only way. And when they use the fear tactics, then the people who don't yet know right behavior or moral values are terrorized to the point of being afraid not to choose that fundamentalist point of view, and then, in fact, it is unhealthy.
But, Marvin, does it speak to you a little bit when you heard Wendy Wright say, look, this could encourage promiscuity. The better path here is not to go for the morning after pill. It's to go for abstinence, essentially, she's saying. Does that speak to you?
It speaks to me because, well, in fact, my wife and I have disagreements on the whole topic ourselves because my wife is a family practice physician here in Bettendorf, mm-hmm. and I have different points of view as far as the efficacy of drugs and that sort of thing for people's health. I choose to encourage people to choose right behavior, choose healthy behavior, rather than wait until a point when they get to be sick and then they have to take drugs. And my wife's point is her job as a family practice physician is to get people back to normal, which I tend to agree with.
But don't so scare them into their decision, you're saying. That's not the way.
Exactly. Fear does not work. I mean, refer to Howard Bloom's book, The Global Mind, The Global Brain, and in which he talks about people actually who are not accepted in their creative expression. They are actually, by the global brain, they're forced into a state of depression because they have not been accepted.
So watch out. Watch out how you step on people. Watch out how you step on science here. Marvin, thanks very much for your call. Let's get another call from Washington. Adam's on the line. Hi, Adam. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm the director of an organization called Metro Teen AIDS. We do a lot of HIV work with HIV prevention, HIV-infected young people here in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to kind of get Dr. Wood's opinion, but also to alert your listeners as well to the fact that about 5.5 million people are infected each year with human papillomavirus, and there's currently a phase 3 trial that's looking very good. And human papillomavirus, there are about 30 of them. that are known or linked to cause cervical cancer.
It's sexually transmitted, and there's a connection to cervical cancer. Got it?
Correct. And the makers of the drug, Merck and GlaxoSmithKline, are both recommending that when the vaccine becomes available, that we vaccinate young people before they become sexually active. And the religious right has already started to make moves to block this and not make that mandatory. And what I think we're doing, especially in our low-income and communities where education around sexually transmitted diseases is very poor, is we're sentencing young people, to some young people to cervical cancer when it can it be completely avoided.
So they could be vaccinated with this drug against cervical cancer. The right is discouraging it, we've read, because they fear, again, that it would encourage sexual promiscuity.
Absolutely.
Adam, thanks for your call. Susan Wood, what do you say to that? Is this another chapter in the story?
Well, yes, I think it is, and I think it actually ties to the comment that the previous caller made, is that the issue of fear and the role of morality in these decisions, and who decides what morality is. Should it be government who sets the moral requirements of sexual behavior, or is that something that individuals need to decide? And I think it really is FDA's job to make sure products are safe and effective, and that they're available to people to use as fits their health needs. And when it comes to the human papillomavirus vaccine, this is an opportunity. If it passes muster, and it still has to go through an FDA review and approval process, but if it passes muster and meets the expectations that have been set out for it,
mm-hmm.
it truly has the potential to reduce cervical cancer in this country and dramatically around the world. And to argue, and I have seen the articles and press releases from organizations who are definitely laying the groundwork that perhaps we shouldn't make this widely available to preteens because they're worried it will affect teen behavior. I'm sorry, I think that frankly is not a moral response when we're talking about the potential to prevent cervical cancer. My thinking of what would be the right thing to do is to protect everyone from that risk of that terrible disease, just as preventing unintended pregnancy is a good thing to do.
But let me ask you, if I may, Susan Wood. We read columnist Ellen Goodman writing about this recently. She said this is a place where the right may favor death over sex. But let me turn it around to you. What if science ends up facilitating dangerous behavior?
Well, that's certainly something. When FDA evaluates a product, it looks at the public health impact. And FDA and the reviewers there did examine the question about whether access to more contraceptives option, another contraceptive option, would increase risky behavior. And frankly, this is where there's misinformation being put out. The data shows that access to more contraception doesn't increase risky behavior. It doesn't put you, it won't change sexual behavior or contraceptive use.
Mm.
And so to FDA can look at the public health impact and weighs the risks and benefits, the benefits of reducing unintended pregnancy and the need for abortion. That's a positive health benefit to be weighed against any potential risks of either the product itself or how it might change behavior. And in this case, there was absolute agreement across the FDA amongst the professional staff that this should be approved and it would not increase it. And we're not just talking about keeping this away from teens. We're talking about keeping emergency contraception and potentially human papillomavirus vaccine away from all people who might benefit from it, and that's, again, that's not government's role. The FDA's job is to protect and promote the public health, and to do that based on science and medical evidence.
Chris Mooney, how far do you see this shift in the way these things are weighed having moved? America rose to power and prided itself on its embrace of science. How far have we moved from that in the halls of power in Washington?
Unfortunately, there has been a great falling off there, I think, from what you might call the heroic era in the relationship between science and politics when we, you know, the space program, putting a man first on the moon, responding to Sputnik by greatly increasing our scientific competitiveness. Unfortunately, the relations between our politicians and our scientists have become increasingly frayed, and we've reached a really low point with this administration where there's total mistrust between the scientific community and the administration. This kind of Plan B thing really is just making it worse.
Holly's calling from Beverly, Massachusetts. Hi, Holly. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to
I'm so
have
happy
you.
I got through.
Good to have you. What do you think, Holly?
I think that this is an extremely alarming situation for our society to be faced with. There should not be a relationship between science and politicians. That opens the door for so much bias, and it really doesn't matter what issue we're talking about. This issue is personally important to me as a woman in this world and as a mother with a daughter. I want her to have access to emergency contraception if she needs it. But in the big picture, the opening of the door where you infuse science with political ideology or religion or anything like that really does set us up for some alarming situations.
But Holly, doesn't science automatically have social implications? I mean, the science of nuclear weapons has social implications. The science of, you name it. Look at almost any scientific decision.
But I think there's a difference between social implications and actual politicians deciding to withhold or misdirect information so that folks at the FDA can't do their job. I mean, this woman who left the FDA, that was a really smart thing for her to do, but there was no reason she should have had to leave her job because she should have been able to do it without pressure being brought to bear by any given politician with any sort of religious bias on their part.
We hear your pushback. Where do you fear this takes us, Holly?
I think this takes us right back to a situation where women in particular, obviously since we're the ones having the babies, are not going to have nearly the kind of control that we previously have enjoyed over whether or not to bring a pregnancy to term, because I think that it's not just about emergency contraception. Clearly, the entire administration is becoming more and more issued about any form of contraception and anything to do with abortion, and we're forgetting the fact that it's due to the pill and due to other pieces along the way that have helped women to decide whether they want to have babies or not. It's entirely due to that sort of thing that we have women in the workforce, that we have women in politics, that we have women in science. And if we don't have a say over how to control our bodies and how to control our health, then we're right back to a situation where you've got women really at home having baby after baby, and that's not good for anybody, not good for the climate and the environment. We don't have enough space in the world for all these people to keep having children. I love children, but I really want to see that we're able to plan them and make sure they're wanted. And the reality is people have sex, people do get pregnant, and we need to be more realistic about that, because when people have sex and get pregnant, they need to decide, is this a child that I have the capacity to bring into this world responsibly, or is this a pregnancy that I need to end before I make a huge mistake in this way?
Holly, we've got you loud and clear, and we thank you for your call. Let me get another call here. Our time's running down from Boston. Kate is calling. Hi, Kate. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a physician in the Boston area, and I do prescribe Plan B for my patients, but considering that it's an FDA Class X and rating, and that means that it has positive evidence of fetal abnormalities in humans or animals, and the fetal risk clearly outweighs the maternal benefits, I always get a urine pregnancy test in advance. And this is not a medication I want sold over the counter my patients at risk.
Let me ask you, Kate, then, what do you make in that case of the fact that 20 out of 24 on the FDA panel said do it? How do you interpret that?
I am not in favor. I interpret it against the best interest of my patient, being both the individual who is requesting the medication and the fetus.
Susan Wood?
Yeah, I'd really like to comment on
that.
Yes,
please.
Because I spent a lot of time at FDA working on pregnancy, the label, the pregnancy categories. And there's unfortunately, I'd have to explain to the doctor that she has a misunderstanding of the term category X. One of the other reasons things can be named category X is when they're not indicated. Because in the case of if you're already pregnant, contraceptions are all labeled category X, because it's not useful to take a contraceptive if you're already pregnant.
So are you saying there is no fetal risk here?
Absolutely not. In fact, this product, progesterone, is a synthetic form of the natural hormone that is produced during pregnancy. And this product, progesterone, in a different form, is sometimes given to pregnant women to help them hold a pregnancy. So this product does not interfere with an established pregnancy, and in fact, it is absolutely safe for an established pregnancy.
Dr. Kate, what do you say to Dr. Wood?
I would want better labeling out there than in advance and education of physicians, because that's not the message that is on the labeling of the product at this time, and it's not the message that the FDA is sending out.
And actually, I'll agree with you on that point. We've been working, and I wish I were still working on it, at FDA to try and revise the pregnancy labeling, because the category system is not very helpful to either physicians or to patients, and it's because each category can mean slightly different things in different circumstances that there's a lot of confusion. Unfortunately, it's been one of those bureaucratic regulatory nightmares, and we haven't been able to clarify that for you, and my apologies from FDA on that.
Two doctors working it out there, and maybe an argument for more clarity, not more muddiness here. Kate, thanks very much for calling. Let me get one more call from Washington. Susan's calling. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking this call. Mm-hmm. What I just listened to further promotes my belief that we need one federal agency, which I assume would be the FDA, whom we can count on to give us straight scientific fact, drug information, safeties, precautions, good, bad, but clear scientific data. Then if people want to govern the morality of their own children by teaching them, look, we think abstinence is best, that's fine. But the two of these do not mix. I taught teenagers for a very, very long time. And what they want are straight answers.
And I would agree, FDA has always been the gold standard as a credible source of information. And although, you know, again, there can sometimes be disagreement and we can always make FDA a better place, if we damage the credibility of FDA, it's going to be difficult to get back.
Susan in Washington, thanks for your call. Dr. Susan Wood in Chicago there today, where do you think we're headed? We've got three more years of the Bush administration and maybe many more years of Republican administration. And this has clearly not been opposed by the White House. Where are we headed with the FDA?
Well, frankly, every day that there's silence from FDA, it's telling us that FDA is no longer independent and is no longer being driven by science and medical evidence. And so even though the agency will tell you we're caught up in a regulatory process and therefore have no comment at the moment, they are telling us that the new commissioner or the people who are running the FDA at the moment are not standing up for the values of the agency and the mission of the agency, because if they were, unfortunately, there's a very clear way forward to just approve it and to demonstrate that the agency is back on track. So in the future, I left, unfortunately, because I felt I couldn't do much more from the inside. But I'm hoping that as American people begin to understand and begin to say, you know, this is not what we want from government, we have expectations of government to do its job, that eventually government will respond.
Are you, we just got a couple of seconds. You bailed out. Are other scientists bailing out of the FDA? Can we be confident it's got the scientific horsepower in there still to do the work?
Well, I do worry about the long-term damage of losing folks from inside, and I have heard of a couple people moving on to other positions. The morale has been damaged by all of this, not just by the folks working in reproductive health, but by the whole FDA staff looking at this and wondering if they are being valued and respected.
Well,
and there is a potential of a loss.
Well, it's quite a picture. Susan Wood, former Assistant Commissioner for Women's Health at the FDA, resigned in August. Thanks very much for being with us, Susan.
Thank you.
And Chris Mooney, author of The Republican War on Science. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The full GAO report is at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.